Welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and we're all about building robustness and resiliency in the magnificent human beast. Yes, sir, that's being hard to kill, both on the playing field and in the game of life. We do that with lifestyle, and we do it with training, and we develop and maximize our strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance. So thank you so much for being with me today. You are a member of this community, and I appreciate you so much. And someone else who I appreciate equally well, if not to the highest degree possible, is my amazing and wonderful co-host, PK.
Good morning, John. High praise. Thank you.
Indeed. So here we go. This is episode number 168, and the title of today's show is How Strong is Strong Enough?
Indeed, talking about strength. I assume that's just not a simple, there's not a simple answer to that.
No, and it's an interesting question, which has, it's come up often. It's come up often in the literature, in different circles of training, certainly in people that I've worked with, and also currently with our training tribe. You know, the training tribe is our online group training and coaching community. We're a team. And this month, we're in that first month of the 3-month training block in our periodized annual training plan, which really emphasizes strength. And so we're really clanging and banging, jumping and pumping, that kind of thing. And so we're talking about it. We're talking about it right now in our weekly master classes. And we're just kind of going over some of the things that we're going to touch on today. And I just thought it would be very useful for our audience to hear what we've got to say about this angle on the strength topic, and also maybe that will help them shape their own perspective, really, which is what this is all about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I am curious, I know we're going to get into it in a minute, but just like how these questions come up, because based on where you're coming at this from, where you're at in your arc as an athlete and just an active person, it could mean so many different things. So I'm curious to hear about that. But before we sort of ask that question again, sort of field some of the, I guess, info that you've picked up over the years and especially recently, talk to me about how you define strength, because I think that that's where we should get started. So we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Well, the definition of strength is fairly simple. It's the ability to produce or withstand force.
And right.
So, yeah. And a lot of times I'll just call it force generation capacity. It's just, you know, one of my lingo terms that I prefer to use. But really, force or strength is most classically measured by a one rep max lift or one repetition maximum, one RM.
Sure.
It can also be measured, in numbers of other ways, including, you know, using various tensiometers and dynamometers and different kinds of things. And you can do some extrapolations from, let's say, a 5RM or a 10RM, you know, what's the best weight you can lift for 10 reps? Well, you can actually put that into some calculators and it'll give you an estimate of what your true 1RM strength might be. A little bit of variance there from individual, but still is valuable to have. Well, the other thing about strength is it's one of the big five. And so that's the big five capacities of human performance, which are well recognized by the sports science literature, and that those are strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance, one of the foundations that we're basing what we do upon. And strength has a very interesting relationship, because in one way or another, it contributes to all the others.
Okay, so interesting. All right, I'm tracking with you there that it's pretty straightforward that strength is force, produce, or withstand. But if we just sort of pulled man or woman off the street and said, what's your definition of strength? We wouldn't get that scientific, I don't think. I mean, I personally wouldn't. You know, I would think about maybe not even words, but just a picture of someone who, you know, was like a strong person, like be able to lift heavy shit, you know, or like even maybe emotionally, just like strength of will, et cetera. So I think that my question is, do you find that when you're talking about this, first, you do have to sort of say, this is what we're talking about in terms of training, that strength is, especially as one of those big five?
Yeah, I think it has to be clarified quite often. Not perhaps with, say, the person who's really got an advanced training age, a lot of history and knowledge, but for most people, because as you indicated, there's this whole idea of like general strength. Like, okay, are you just sort of, strong through many things that you do in a physical capacity? And that the real definition there, where I'm talking about 1 RM, that's known as absolute strength. And then this mm-hmm. other general strength is kind of like relative strength. And so, yeah, I think most people will appreciate that being relatively strong. Then there's the strength of character, which you indicated as well. Just another definition that is entirely valid, but it's worth clarifying. Say, all those things are great attributes to have, but we're really talking about, force. And it just makes it clear then when we get into the physiology, how do we do that within the body or the human beast?
Got it. And I'm glad you mentioned relative. I think that is, we have empirically where it's just, if we were just looking at readout and we didn't know who was doing it versus different types of people. So that does beg the question then, the title of the episode, strong enough. What do you mean when you say how strong is strong enough by strong enough?
Yeah, this is where the it depends statements become most useful, because it definitely depends upon context. And so before I've got a couple thoughts on that, I would say also strength is specific when you're measuring it. Like a strong person is probably going to have a high strength measure in any test. Like, is it a squat or a bench press or whatever, but those things are actually as separate as well as related, where you can develop your strength in just one position or movement pattern exclusively. And there's pros and cons to doing that, of course. But if I come back to your question, what's meant by strong enough? It's basically, well, first of all, on the most basic of levels, I say to myself or to anyone else, are you strong enough for your everyday function? I mean, can you get up and down off the floor, out of a chair? Can you pick up and carry and push and pull all the things that you need to do, open doors? I mean, that's really important. And I think especially as we move through the lifespan, we want to make sure that we do have requisite or adequate strength to perform those everyday functions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Tracking. How else do you think about strong enough?
Well, then I think about body types, and it's just a relative thing there, because each body type probably has a potential or a ceiling for how strong that they can get. So a very, a thin, wispy individual can get strong for that body type, but that person probably will never be quite as strong as the person who is the bear of the animal fit kingdom. And that's the guy that always gets asked to help move the gun safe, the refrigerator, the couch. So we want to keep the body types in perspective to be realistic about how much strength we can put on a beast.
Yeah. And I think that is, again, it celebrates that. That's not a value judgment at all, but it is, I think, important. Some of the most, I think, impressive feats of strength that I've seen are relative to a body type, because that strength or force to body size, that's when something is absolutely impressive.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. And, then I go right into that, or right from that into age. And so we say, well, are you strong enough for your age? And what we really mean by that is we understand that most things in biology exist roughly under, a bell-shaped curve. The exact shape might be a little bit different for strength or between individuals, but nonetheless, through your developmental years, you're going to build strength, and it's going to cap out in early adulthood and probably maintain a fairly high level for quite a bit of adulthood. And then in later life, or senescence, if you want to use that term, we'll see a decline. Well, that's interesting, because the literature is very supportive that if we build a lot of that strength and maintain it through the middle portion of life, we have a bigger bank of strength to fall back on later in life, and it trickles away more slowly than would be the person who was not strength training.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we've talked about that a fair bit on the show, but I think it's worth just mentioning again that's a piece of strong enough for your age. Any other considerations when you're thinking about being strong enough for fill in the blank?
Yeah, and this becomes the big one for lifetime athletes. It's, well, are you strong enough for your sport, the sport that you play and the demands it has, or the position that you, you know, take up within that sport? This is really a fascinating topic of study and of opinion. And you'll hear things out there, you know, that may trickle out of, say, the NFL or other places, like, oh, you know, you, as a bare minimum for this position, you need to be you need to be able to bench press 1.5 times your body weight, or squat 2 times your body weight, deadlift 2.5. You know, those are numbers that are out there. And so whether or not they're entirely valid, that's another question. But where I always come back to is like strength to a point. You have to have it. If you're weak, and I'm not saying that in a derogatory manner, just weak in terms of being able to produce that force, then none of your movements are going to work well, and you're not going to be able to execute. But once you get strength up to an adequate or good level, then you start to have that argument. Well, is making me more strong going to make me better? And probably not, because then we want to shift some of our attention into developing the other capacities as well as specific skills, which might be used in any sport or activity or passion.
You know, it's really interesting. I saw an article, and forgive me if this is a bit of a tangent, a couple weeks ago about a wide receiver. I don't know who he played for in the pros, but he played, his name is David Boston. He played for Ohio State. He was super, he was like jacked, you know, you can just tell he was a very strong guy. And the title of the article was, he got too jacked for football, for being a wide receiver. And so when you mentioned that, I just thought, it made me think about that article and just about how the additional strength or whatever, I know this, I don't have any facts here, so forgive me for just flying up by the seat of my pants, but that's the situation that you're describing, where up to a certain point, the strength is useful, but beyond that, it might actually pull away from the other components of the big five that you're using to excel at your sport.
Yeah, I think that was an outstanding example. And, you know, you brought into my mind, or made me think of, the great Jerry Rice, you know, and he was, kind of a slim, almost lanky guy. And he was well known for not being a big fan of the weight room. His point being, I'm strong enough, and if I spend too much time on that, I lose some of my elasticity and my speed. And indeed, he was correct there. Obviously, you know, in different positions in the game, you know, you got to have that physical armor in football. But, nobody's going to argue with his success record.
No, if you're arguing with Jerry Rice's anything that he did, you are on the wrong side of that argument. You know, that's just the fact. David Boston, by the way, played for the Arizona Cardinals. Anyway, you can find that video. It's out there. It's like, he worked out so hard it ended his career. What happened? But that's kind of what you're talking about for the sport and position. All right, John. So I'm thinking about this, and I'm sure some of our audience is how do I test my strength? Now that you've got me thinking about what is strong enough, how it pertains to my age, everyday function, my sport, my body type, et cetera, how do I get some baseline numbers to then determine where I'm at in terms of being strong enough?
Yeah, this is a great part of today's discussion, because that comes up a lot. A person will say, well, you know, how are we going to test my strength if we're going to develop it? And we know that it's important, as we've laid out this case. Well, first thing I usually say is, hey, let's save that one rep max test for athletes who are in the true strength sports. So, you know, things like powerlifting, bodybuilding, Olympic lifting, Highland Games, strongman. That is the sport. That's what they do. And so those people should do one rep max tests. The rest of us, and this is my opinion, it is shared by some others, is that the reward of that knowledge is probably not worth the risk. And so I like to trickle down through a few other things. First of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with subjective considerations. And so if you, hey, do you feel stronger? Yeah, you probably are. You know that. And, just feel stronger. But then we can be objective and we can say, oh, well, gosh, you know, I do notice now that like in the last workout, I got one more rep on my set, or I added 5 more pounds to a lift. That's objective. You can also say some of those things I do in the everyday tasks. And this came up actually from a Training Tribe member, just popped into my head. She and her husband were working on a home improvement project. This was just a couple of weeks ago that she shared this with me. And she said, we were unloading a bunch of building materials off the truck. And, you know, some of it was heavy, and husband's named Adam. And she said, Adam looked at me and he thought, oh, this is going to be too heavy. Maybe we got to figure something else out. And she said, you know, I just lifted it and it was no problem. And then I thought, gosh, these workouts really are making me stronger. And so that's cool. They were both surprised and pleased.
I mean, that's the ultimate expression of like your training playing out in the real world, you know, like that's beautiful.
Yeah. And let's say that like you're a person who does like numbers and really likes to use a lot of calculations, possibly spreadsheets in what you're doing in your training. You want to track things. Well, so sometimes when we're training, we'll talk about using RPE or rate of perceived exertion, usually on a 1 to 10 scale. And then sometimes it's RIR, repetitions in reserve, how many reps do you have left in the tank when you stop the set? And so, you know, like a RPE of 9 would be similar to an RIR of 1. You know, if you go 9 out of 10 effort, you got 1 rep left. And that's pretty good, you know, a good way to track. But a lot of times folks prefer to add into that, I want to lift at X percentage of max because I'm trying to track a strength progression. And that's very true in those who play the iron game very seriously. So one of the things I recommend a lot, and actually there's an article this week at thelifetimeathlete.com under the media on this very same topic, how strong is strong enough? And there's a link to the 1 rep max calculator, which is available from bodybuilding.com, where you can just put in what's the best weight you can lift for any set from 1 to 12 reps. And then it will spit out what your estimated max is and then percentages from 95% down to 50% in increments of 5. And so that's kind of cool to have when you want a little help with the math in laying out a really detailed program.
Interesting. I do like that sort of circling it from a few different perspectives. And then if you want to just kind of crunch some numbers and get analytical about it, there's a way to do it safely. I like that. So so if someone's saying, I want to test this and they've got a handful of different exercises that where they want to test their strength, you know, do you have a way that you'd go about doing it? Maybe you would sort of alternate legs and arms. You would only do one lift per day or any other thoughts if someone actually is saying, I'm going to go out there and do this.
Yeah. Well, when we have someone who's got some training experience and it's safe for them, you know, they're ready. I'm a big fan of triples actually. So that's a 3 rep set. You know, it gives you a very nice look at strength without being nearly as maybe risky as a 1 rep attempt. And I tend to limit those to the big compound movements because they're the most valid to be testing with. So you're looking at things like, you know, what's your max on a variation of a squat, a bench press, overhead press, things like that. And then for people that do Olympic lifting, it's not for everybody. You know, you could say, well, you know, what's your best triple on a snatch or something. So that's kind of how I do it. I don't think it's quite as meaningful with the isolation exercises doing testing. But I think you're also a good point is that, you know, the tank, the energy tank, the fuel tank in the body is such that you probably only want to test one thing on a given day in a fresh recovered state. And then whether you're going to test that again or test something else, that might not happen for, you know, weeks in many cases. You know, a lot of excuse me, high level lifters actually, you know, don't, there's different models. I understand that, but a lot of them, they don't max too often. They just do it every once in a while to touch on where they're at.
Right. And it can be, I think that, you know, it's been a while for me, but once you start getting into that game, it can be, I don't want to use the word addictive, but it's enchanting to see, hey, I've been training for a week, is anything different? But you want to hold off on that. If you're actually going for the true one rep max, you want to, you know, give it some time in between taking those measurements.
Yeah, precisely. I think that the way you said that makes a lot of sense to me, that, you know, give it some time to get some adaptations occurring. So you're more likely to show a progress. And then also one has to be careful of maximum intensity in training applied too often, as it, the body, it just gets too much for the body to absorb. And then we may have breakdown instead of build up.
Right. Well, speaking of adaptations in the body, there's a couple of things that pop into my mind. And I just want you to break these down and contrast them, compare and contrast. One is strength versus hypertrophy. I know those are two, if you're clanging and banging, concepts that will come up, and they're not the same thing, but lay it out for me about why they're not and what to look for in terms of each.
Yeah, they're similar, but also different. Although I would say in most cases they're more similar than they are different. Mm-hmm. So trying to explain that, you know, strength. So that, again, we're back to max force. We're absolute force here. It involves something called rate coding, you know, which is similar with speed, where our brain, our motor cortex, basically flips the switches and fires the right, you know, amount and intensity of muscle fibers, you know. So that's something that happens with strength very specifically. You know, we actually develop a skill with training, and that's also, it's just related to this whole concept of motor unit recruitment. And so, you know, mm-hmm. a motor unit is just a you know, a portion in the brain, you know, a neuron that connects to a neuromuscular junction or a synapse in the muscle. And that's basically from your fuse box, or not fuse box, but your breaker box these days, the wiring down to the light switch. And, you know, you get that. Strength, again, you know, connective tissue integrity, very, very big thing, you know. So we've got to have strong bones and ligaments and tendons, because that at maximum loads, we don't want stuff blowing out. And so that's kind of how strength is sort of unique, but then it's also highly dependent upon muscle size. I mean, you know, you can be strong and not too big, and you can be really big and maybe not at your max strength, but those things sort of, they sort of run together, you know, they blur and blend. So that's how kind of strength is. And then if we go specifically to hypertrophy is enlargement in the muscle fibers, and those are the gains. And so, you know, when you're talking about making gains in anything, you know, you can gain in speed, you can gain in flexibility, but most of the time when people say gains, they're talking about muscle mass gains. And, hypertrophy is just a fancy word for thickening and enlargement of the cellular machinery within the muscle fiber. So it just gets better at storing energy and has more powerful equipment to combust it. And that happens most effectively in the fast twitch or type 2 muscle fibers, although it still does occur in the type 1 or slow twitch muscle fibers. Well, finally, if I go to hypertrophy, this is probably like, it's one of the things we're talking about this week in our masterclass with the training tribe, but there are three factors which will drive hypertrophy or adaptation to training. And I'll say them real quick, and then I'll come back and describe them slightly. There's tension, there's muscle fiber microdamage, and then there's metabolic stress.
Right, okay, get into each of those.
Okay, so tension, sometimes you'll hear it expressed as time under tension. And while that is true, it really should be looked at as total or accumulated tension. So it's not just the amount of time that muscle is contracting under tension, but it's the magnitude of the load that's present as well. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the example would be, you know, if we use, let's just use tens, let's say, you know, you're 10 seconds under load with 1 pound. Well, you know, effectively that's a 10 pound load, but if you're 10 seconds under load with 100 pounds, that's 1,000 pound total accumulated tension. And so that volume of loading is what is one of the stimuli for telling the body, hey, you know, let's build muscle. And especially when we're tracking things in a program, like you're multiplying reps times sets times weight, you know, you can do some load calculations. Again, back to that person that likes to do that sort of thing. And then we can, you know, we can incrementally progress and occasionally regress loading to make sure that we're maximally fulfilling the tension requirements for muscle development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it. Got it. Fiber micro damage. What the heck does that mean?
Yeah. So the muscle fibers or myofibrils, when you're doing, you know, enough resistance training, especially heavy lifting, and especially the lowering or eccentric phase of lifts, you get some really minor micro tearing in the muscles, which is normal, and it's actually desirable at the right level. It's sometimes related to what's called DOMS, you know, delayed onset muscle soreness, but we want a small amount of that because it's a powerful signaling mechanism for the body. And then what the body says is, oh, this clown keeps doing this to me and I got to become impervious to it. So instead of rebuilding back from that insult at 0.95, the body will, this is an arbitrary number, it'll come back at 1.05. So you're getting a little bit more fortification from that stimulus.
Right. And that's that sort of, you know, if you've, I guess, talked about lifting at all, it's like, all right, tearing it down to make it stronger. That's just the, yeah, got it.
Yeah. And that's very specific to like, well, we don't always want to be doing that. It depends on where we're at in our year and our season. But when our goal is really to maximize these gains of strength and hypertrophy, yeah, we want to experience some of that because that's such a powerful stimulus. And then the third and final thing was the metabolic stress. And that's kind of an obvious one. You know, it's sort of like what I call the suck factor. And I've gotten that from other people. But basically, your workout has to have some component of there's some effort, there's some fatigue, there's a bit of burn. And the burn is, of course, related to lactate production, which is actually a signal that we're utilizing fast twitch muscle fibers. And since they're the ones that respond most optimally to resistance training, we want to make sure we're biasing the workout in the fast twitch realm when we're trying to build strength and hypertrophy.
Yeah, and I think obviously that goes to, there's that's something that's tangible to recognize that there's got to be a burn if you're getting the hypertrophy, just period.
Yeah. And it's one of those crazy things too. It's like, you know, when we're designing workouts, you know, we're going to have, there's prep. And so there's prep, you know, it's got mobility and activation stuff. And then when we get to the main or primary part of whatever we're doing, let's say it is a strength training focus, well, there are going to be multiple sets. There's going to be several like warm-up sets or progressive sets building up until you get to the working sets where, you know, you're doing the work and doing the load. So most people, you know, will only really count the sets that are getting into that, you know, stressful zone. But having said that, you know, you don't need too many of those, in a given week, to get this stimulus. And again, we always have to be careful finding that Goldilocks point where, oh man, that was the right amount, I'm making the gains, not either I didn't get close enough or I floored myself.
Right. Yeah, and that is that's the dance. But, you know, the more that you do it, the easier you can identify it. What else are we thinking about in terms of strength versus hypertrophy now that we've sort of defined each of them, John?
Well, there's several things that fit together. So we obviously, I mean, I think we did a fairly good job there of explaining training stimulus and what those things were that sort of set up the environment for adaptation. But what the adaptation is when that muscle is building, it's known as muscle protein synthesis. And, you know, so we have the training stimulus, but now in order for the muscle to synthesize protein, we have to do that from ingested dietary protein. And, we've really fallen into here, you know, just really being ballparkish because the literature really hovers around 1 gram of protein per pound of lean body mass per day as a great target for most athletic individuals. You know, you can go slightly lower and higher, but that's just a good target to head and to hit, excuse me. And, you know, unless you have a person has a lot of adipose tissue to lose, so you can make the math even simpler by just saying one gram of protein per pound of body weight. And it's just like, okay, easy. So if you got the dude who's 200 pounds, shooting to get 200 grams of protein in per day. So 4 to 5 feedings of 40 to 50 grams of protein gets it done.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So what to say?
Else?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, I would try to go into that a little further because sometimes, you know, occasionally, and I welcome it. I love, you know, everyone who's listening, get some feedback, you know, or a comment, and they'll say, well, you know, 4 to 5 meals per day. Wow, that's different than, like, say, sometimes you guys talk about being on maybe more of a ketogenic diet and it's 1 to 2 meals per day. And I was like, yeah, there are places for all of these things. And so if we have a metabolism that's not healthy and it needs to get restored and we've got some other issues and weight loss is a big goal, we might not be trying to train at that time for maximal muscular gains. We're better off, as opposed to metabolic multitasking, just to do that one thing. But then again, when we've got a healthy, hard training athlete, this is the way to go. So just wanted to clarify that. Sure. You know, the literature is fairly clear as well that, you know, you need the bolus in that feeding or the trigger has to be a minimum of about 30 grams of protein or just under. So if you're a smaller person, that's kind of what you're shooting for in most cases. And it has to have 2.7, 2.8 grams of the amino acid leucine in it to be most effective for triggering muscle protein synthesis. Now, if you eat animal-based proteins, you're generally going to get that every time, so you don't have to really think about it too much. But just wanted to put that out there to clarify. And then maybe the last thing. So we've got training as a stimulus. We've got feeding as, you know, providing the building blocks. And then we've got recovery. And, you know, so recovery is not just the time period between workouts. It's the window in which the body is built, and it's very dependent upon what we do with that time. And so we want to make sure that, first of all, the length of time is adequate, but then we've got other practices like maintaining, you know, circulation and working on other parts of fitness, which is highly appropriate to do before we go back to heavy loading. Good sleep, stress management, all those things factor in when you're trying to make gains because, you know, the body is just harmonically regulated. And if you're trying to build strength or vertical jump or speed or any of those things, it won't work unless you've got almost everything perfect.
Right. And that it's just crucial. It's crucial to it. And especially as we've talked about at length, for the dedicated athletes, especially when they start clanging and banging, the also being dedicated to recovery is crucial for the gains.
Indeed, sir.
So you wanted to talk about periodization as well. How does that play into this whole conversation?
Yeah, and part of that was because everything we just talked about makes sense and it is evidence-backed, but I wouldn't want to leave people with the impression, hey, you got to do exactly this all the time, because that's not true. You know, that we need to have flex and flow through the year and follow, you know, seasons and periods, and that happens naturally in the natural world, but we want to also not contrive our modern world to just always train the same way. You know, you want to have peaks and valleys, and that's important. And so having said that, then I would say, here's the real cool thing about strength. It takes a heck of a lot of work to build it up. You know, what we just described, basically doing all that stuff. But then once you've got a certain level, and the research really supports this very strongly, it takes much less work to maintain it. You know, so once you've got your strength at a point, you can do almost a minimal amount of training as long as it's intense enough for months and not see much of a strength decrement. And that's wonderful to know, because what that allows us to do in the athletic model is typically in the off season, build up strength and then maintain it while we're starting to shift focus and blend in, you know, working more on speed, power, agility, endurance, or specific sports skills. That's kind of the magic of it all. And I just think it's so important to appreciate that natural seasonal fluctuation and avoid stagnation in anything we do in life, but particularly our training patterns.
Indeed. Well, John, speaking of you know, training patterns, we always like to take it home as we finish these up. How would you, I don't know, what are your takeaways? What are your nugs of training wisdom?
First nug that just hit me was I looked down at an almost empty third cup of coffee. And I think, you know, I never go back and look at this, but I think my word count per minute is way up this week.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that you're just sort of, I think you're maintaining, you know, kind of at a high level. I wouldn't even have guessed. I would have thought you were on cup number two.
That's probably it for the day. But I stacked it, man.
Well, take us home. What do you think about it? Right,
yeah, try and sum this up. I think it's good to have some points beyond the general science stuff that we were talking about. So I would say this. First of all, resistance training, that's RT. That's our, you know, our weights, body weight, bands, tubing, machines, etc. Although I do think being with the iron most of the time is superior. It's my opinion. It's how we achieve strength and hypertrophy. So doing resistance training. And then even though strength and hypertrophy are slightly different, that overlap between them and the value of achieving both of them is huge. And so I would say, don't worry too much. You know, for most of us, quite honestly, you know, unless you're doing everything perfect and training like a, you know, crazed beast and possibly using performance enhancing drugs, you're just not going to blow up. So for people that worry about that, you know, I think just generally a two-sided worry. The females worry that that's going to happen to them, it's probably not. And then the males wish it would, and it's probably not. So just putting that out. But getting stronger and having a little bit more muscle mass, and even like I believe last week we were talking about, that also helps with bone mineralization, bone density, organ weight. All those things really matter in both your ability to perform at any age and also to hang on later. So from there, I'd say this resistance training, if you start breaking it down, what you're really looking to accomplish is 10 to 20 sets of valid work per week. Per something, and that something could be per muscle or muscle group or body part or movement pattern, you know, whatever. So like, again, to give examples that, like, say, well, if you're trying to grow your pecs, you know, so you want 10 to 20 sets in a week on the pecs to establish that. So that might be spread out over a couple workouts. If it's like you're saying, I want my, you know, it's PK, sun's out, guns out, I want my arms bigger. So now you just look at it that way. Or if it's somebody maybe like me who's kind of more into this whole training movements over muscles and, you know, patterning, I want to get better at, let's say my squat. And so there you go. Same kind of thing. And all those sets, that for the set to have value, it has to have intent. So it really can't be like the warm-up set, although you should still be focusing and squeezing. It's those sets where the RPE, rate of perceived exertion, is going to go up 7, 8, 9, or RIR 3, 2, 1. With only occasionally going to, you know, perceived exertion of 10 or reps in the tank 0, you don't need to do that too much, but it's just, we want to get that good solid work in. That's what causes the body to do all that list of things we went over. So that's what I would say. Okay, there's your basics on resistance training. And so you're putting together a program. It's not really that difficult. You know, you might have, there's different ways to do a training split. It could be a full body times 3 per week. It could be upper, lower, off. It could be push, pull legs, whatever. There's reasons to do any of those. But, you know, you're probably looking at a time in the gym. You can get it done in 30 minutes, but 45 is better. Beyond an hour, start to get into looking at fatigue and diminishing returns. So that's what I would say, 45 to 60 minutes, nice sweet spot for training, maybe 40 to 60 if you want to say that. Okay, now, that was my, like, okay, here's what resistance training really looks like. Now, per the literature, strength, if you're just talking about building that strength, the force abilities, that's most impacted by the heavier weights, lower rep sets of about 1 to 6 reps. So if you're working sets that are with that intent are under the bigger loads, studies will show you might get a few percentage points more strength out of that type of lifting. But of course, you know, that's a little bit tougher on the joints as well. So we want to be careful. Hypertrophy. So that's really the building, the bulking of the muscle. It's a little bit more metabolic or circulation dependent. And so sets that are, again, the working sets, 8 to 15 reps have been shown to be possibly most effective. Not that other ones aren't effective. These are just possibly most effective. And then finally, you know, if you say, well, I'm lifting actually for endurance or fatigue resistance, which, yeah, it's okay. I'm not crazy about that, but that's 15 plus, you know, so people who are doing sets of, you know, 20, 30 and up reps. I mean, there, again, there's a place, sometimes it's good just to shock the system, but so those would be the three things. Now, however, strength and hypertrophy gains can happen with very relatively light weights, as low as 40% of one rep max, if you do high rep sets, and as long as they go very close to total failure, thus getting more of that high metabolic stress. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, that light weights can work for a person for whom either, let's say, they don't have during, you know, pandemic times, they don't have access to heavy weights, or, you know, they, it's just not, it's not appropriate for them to use heavier weights. So this does work best with beginners and low training age individuals, again, doing those like long light sets, but it can work for anybody in a pinch. Wanted to mention that. Then we have this other.
John, before you go on from that, I do think that the key to, if you are going to do that, you have to go very close to total failure. So you have to feel that burn. You have to take yourself there. So it could take, it could take longer, the rep, and will, with the lower percentage of one rep max, but you got to go to the burn.
Yeah, and ironically, like, you, in some ways you'd think, oh, it's easier because the weight's lighter, but I find that it's mind numbing, and it's really hard to concentrate that much. And, you know, you have to keep checking yourself. You're like, yeah, I got a couple more. Whereas if you're only doing six reps, and it's over pretty quick, no matter how hard you're concentrating. So again, everybody's got their jam. And then you can also add into that what's called super slow training. It's been, you know, popular for a while, to really just stay under tension for a very long time. And particularly on the long eccentric or lowering phases, that has been shown to be effective. You can even throw in some pauses and some isometric squeezes, which, you know, again, makes training, especially like, say, in the older population for whom heavy training just might be less desirable, makes it still accessible and effective.
Interesting. So there's a lot of, you know, you just laid out five different ways to get it, based on where your situation is, what your goals are. I love it.
Yeah. And so everybody deserves to get jacked. You know, it's just, it's a right. It's a privilege, but sometimes you need a coach, you know, cause like, obviously we can go through explaining this and, sure. You know, you'll meet a person that says, that sounds, it's just a high degree of complexity. Can you help me as a coach to simplify it? Yeah, sure. Or, you know, oftentimes I'll find a person that says, well, this is how I do it. This is how I've always done it. And then I say, yeah, but you made no progress. You know, you're doing the same thing forever, but it's crap stuff. It doesn't work. And so, you know, we got to have that.
That's so great. I really, that is one of my least favorite character traits, and also the most entertaining, you know, someone that asks for help, but then says, this is how I've been doing it for so long. Anyway,
Philism.
Philly boy. Yes. All right. Anything else that you want to
leave? Yeah. Exciting stuff. Up? New science. So, you know, been out for a few years, but we have BFR training, or blood flow restriction training. And so this is really an interesting thing. Like I say, it's been around not too many years, at least as far as being popular, but now it's kind of flooding into both, you know, clinical use and gyms as well. And I just, right now this month, I'm doing the combined sections meeting. It's the largest physical therapy conference in the world. I've attended it several times in person. It's like a week at a convention center, but we're doing it in a virtual manner spread out over a month. the other night I was doing a workshop on blood flow restriction training and just looking at what the latest science was and what's going on. So it's very interesting. It was fresh in my mind. So I thought, hey, let me share this with our wonderful audience because you might want to think about it. So how it works is you use these occlusion cuffs, which are actually tourniquets, kind of like blood pressure cuffs, that occlude around 90% of the arterial flow before or during your exercise. And it's this, in my opinion, again, is this is best done using quality equipment, not like the cheapy straps you get off Amazon. And maybe even with professional supervision, the risks are fairly low, but there are some issues. And so that's what I think about that. Now, how it works, we put these cuffs on, up near the shoulder on the arms and near the hips on the legs, maybe not all at once. You can do one arm or one or both arms, or you know how that goes. The load is only around 30% of one rep max. So it's a very light load that you're going to lift in the exercise. And then there's a fairly specific protocol, which has been popularized, and it is this, 30, 15, 15, 15. And so that's the initial set of 30 reps, followed by a set of 15 reps, another set of 15 reps, and then a final set of 15 reps, all with 30-second rests. So that's the typical protocol. And what this does is it creates a rapid hypoxia in the muscle. Hypoxia meaning because the blood flow is minimized, arterial blood flow, you're not getting much oxygen. So it fatigues out those slow twitch or oxidative fibers very quickly, allowing then the fast twitch fibers to be activated at a lower load than they would normally want to kick in. And so you get a lot of the training effects of, you know, of training heavier without the load.
That is fascinating. That's really fascinating. So if let's practically, so you're working on your squats, you have these, you get these cuffs on, at the top of your quads, and then you do this prescribed protocol, and it simulates the same sort of fast twitch fiber activation that you would under a heavier load. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, and to some extent, and I would say, gosh, you know, with a squat, as probably one of the most intense heavy compound lifts, I'm not sure I'd do it there because somebody might pass out. But, you know, like doing an isolation movement, like if you were going to do a curl or a leg extension, you know, so that might be more applicable for this type of training. And so I would say it has great promise in rehab because, you know, we can now find ways to train people coming back from injury and surgery or who have other, physical challenges effectively and safely. And then it's also being used quite a bit now with special populations, such as in the military, you know, finding ways to train. Energy is finite. And so some of that research got presented the other night by Johnny Owen. He's a physical therapy colleague down in San Antonio, and he's doing a lot of work in developing some of these training protocols with different divisions of the military. So lots of applications for blood flow restriction training. And all I would say to anyone who's listening is, hey, beware some of the knockoff products out there. Again, I'm not so sure you want to be alone in your garage gym with some Amazon straps trying this out. It just might not be the best. And that's just me talking, or other people say, nah, go right ahead, no problem. But I've prided myself on not killing anybody, you know? So as I go through this journey, it's very important for that. And you can also, now here's this crazy thing. You can possibly do a homemade protocol that doesn't use tourniquets, in which you do a really high rep, lightweight set to fatigue in an exercise. Then with barely any rest at all, you could shake it out and go to a moderately heavy set after only a partial rest. So when you do that, you know, you're going to still get some pre-fatiguing of the slow twitch fibers, and then you'll activate more fast twitch fibers in that moderate weight set following it. So you can kind of Mickey Mouse this. And the thing I would say is this is not new. Actually, it's called pre-fatigue or pre-exhaustion, and bodybuilders have been doing it for decades. So, we always think we were inventing new things, but we're really not anymore. We're just changing them up a little bit. So good to think that way.
Now, that's expert level stuff, either one of those, just for those playing the iron game. So I think that you're just sort of pause disclaimer is wise. Again, I'm not an expert by any stretch, but if you're thinking about getting into this, you know, do it with your eyes wide open.
Yeah, and I think that's what like the whole idea for today's talk was, hey, let's just talk about, again, strength and working on muscles and exercise a different way, kind of share with some folks some of the ways that we do it at the Lifetime Athlete with one-on-one coaching clients or with the training tribe. And that's, it's pretty cool because I see a lot of people happy, you know, they're saving time, energy, money, getting results. And it's because we're doing this kind of stuff. And again, keeping an open mind, changing it up as we go along too, as we learn new things. And so in parting, I appreciate everyone for being here today. Gosh, it means so much to me to be able to share, no matter how animated I get sometimes. Thanks for putting up with me if that's the case. But find out what you need to be, what you need to do to be strong enough. You know, how strong you need to be and how you get there. Use some of the muscle science tips that we discuss to get and stay hard to kill. Sign on to work with me in a one-on-one coaching relationship if you're really hoping to 10x gains, and join the tribe if you want to dive into the art of strength, among other things. Thank you again, and thanks, PK.
Adios, everyone.